Menace Nation, it's Menace Morning Time.
Wake 'em up.
I don't do the most, but I do a lot.
Tryna hide from the camera.
I'ma make a toast, cause we still alive.
I ain't going outside today.
No big.
Couldn't find our tick. So I'm drinking on Accutane.
I feel like Pac.
I'ma pull up my style. We gon' do a drive-by in the rain.
I shoot a shot. I'm coming in.
It is Wednesday or Thursday, April 7th. Welcome to Menace in the Morning. What a day. The Masters kicks off opening day in baseball. I have a hard time watching baseball just consistently for an entire season, but I love opening day and I love the postseason. So it's a great day for sports. And if you don't like, if you don't like golf, I can't relate, but the Masters is second to none. And it's this weekend. And if you aren't watching, or if you want to watch, you want a vested interest, man, just throw a couple dollars on it. I know we have, at Menace to Picks, our handicapping service, we put out four or five golfers to win. Just threw a little money on it. Me and my friends that have a little group bet going. It's just a fun way to watch the tournament, especially if you pick a guy in contention, man, it's always fun. So if you're interested in that card, go to Menace to Picks at Menace2Picks on Twitter and follow along. But great day for sports. Want to also double down and mention zone6.com. If you are a skilled athlete, football player, or you coach skilled athletes, go check out zone6.com. It's 7-day free trial. You can cancel if it's not valuable to you. I just think I want to get as many eyes on it, on the content, as I can, because I know it's valuable. I mean, it is essentially me just opening up my knowledge to you, and it's going to be consistent. I mean, from here to the end of time, I'm just going to be delivering content on my insight and knowledge into the game of football, fundamentals, drill videos, you name it. So go check that out, zone6.com. If you want to just go ahead and sign up, you can use a promo code GRIND, G-R-I-N-D, to get 50% off. So wanted to throw that out there. And if you're here watching on YouTube, do me a favor, like the video, comment on the video, and tell me who's going to win the Masters. I know it's a football show, but I want to know who's going to win the Masters. Who do you think is going to win the Masters this weekend? And I obviously click subscribe, click the bell, so you can hang out with Chris and I every morning, 9 a.m.
Yeah, it really helps. But Zach, how you feeling, man?
I feel great. I just told you, it's Masters and opening day of baseball. Well, I mean, can't get better. I've been working out like crazy. I think I hurt my back. You know, it's what happens. I'm training with a woman in her 20s that's like a freaking bikini model, and here I am doing squats and deadlifts, and my back is toast right now. So we got that going.
I was telling Zach yesterday, Zach goes to the gym all the time, and I see it, and it's like, I go to the gym too, but I go to mess around with my homie Brad. We just go in there and just fake lift for 2 hours and then skedaddle. And I was looking at Brad the other day like, yo, we might want to actually put some work in, because I'm not trying to get embarrassed by Zach when I go down to Columbus and he asked me to go to do a workout. So, but man, usually I work 7 days a week. Like, usually I'm work every day, but for the first time, and I don't know how long, I got a couple personal days off, so I'm kicking it with Zach, and we'll tell you all about it once I'm back at work. But yesterday, Ohio State landed a kid. Just real quick, the Malik Hartford kid from Lakota West, safety, is now committed. Number 147 in the country, if you use the composite, number 11 safety, number 4 ranked in Ohio. I don't want to talk too much about it, Zach, but quick reaction to the kid committing to Ohio State.
Well, my quick reaction is I can't stand recruiting media. I just can't. And that's why I've never been able to fully dive into recruiting on this show, because I watched the kid. You sent me, you said, this kid's going to commit this afternoon. Here's his highlight. If you want to do a video or whatever, and I still might do a YouTube video just kind of breaking down kind of my analysis of the prospect, right, Malik Hartford. But You go on Twitter and every Buckeye beat reporter is just, I mean, fully hard, all 4 inches standing tall. And it's like, I don't know what they're so excited about. I mean, the kid is a good player. I'm not saying they don't want him, and I'm not trying to shit on the kid, but he is a project. He is long. He's 6'3". He's rangy, but he's just, he's not.
He has tools. He's not there yet.
Well, he's not someone on film that pops and you go, whoa, holy shit. Like, the plays he makes, and I'll tell you this, he comes downhill and he's a good tackler. That's the two things that I will say he does. But he's 6'3", like 185, so he's slight. He doesn't look like a burner to me. He doesn't look like he has elite speed. So we'll see. I think he's a project post safety. That's what I think he is. I think he's a very talented kid that has a chance to become a good player. But you know, you watch some of these people talking about he's Malik Hooker, he's this, and it's like, whoa, calm down. Good God. Yeah. We always want to anoint kids like he's the next freaking Sean Taylor. It's like, good God, let's relax a minute. Zach Harrison's also the next Chase Young, right? I know, I heard it all. So that's why I haven't been able to dive in and become a full recruiting show in the offseason, because I can't stand it. The way these kids are anointed, and I don't want to talk negative about a kid, because this kid is a really good player. He's a great high school player, and he's definitely someone that Ohio State should recruit. Being that he's an Ohio kid, he's definitely a take for Ohio State, because you need those Ohio kids. And if he really works hard, if he really grinds, he could become a really good player. That's my analysis of him. To sit here and say, I heard you sent me the people were saying, oh, if he was down south, he'd be a top 50 prospect. Shut up. No, he wouldn't. He's about right where he should be, about 150th in the country, outside of the top 10 is safety, but still a really good player. Like I said, a take for Ohio State, an Ohio kid that has a pretty high ceiling and could develop into a really good player. That's what he is. So yes. Let's not take Viagra and get all excited about it. Let's relax and know that it's really good. Really good for Ohio State. They got him. Good for the kid. He's going to be a Buckeye. That's all great. But the kid's got a road to see the field, and he's going to have to grind.
As we begin to get into a little bit more recruiting stuff, it's not going to be like your typical recruiting, like get a hard on for these kids. And we do see the thing. Sometimes you do have to, you know, find a diamond in the rough, but we're going to give you really honest breakdowns of these kids, kind of what their upside is and what their floor is, so that you're not shocked when we get a safety out there that doesn't look as good. And it's like, and then you guys want to bash them on Twitter. So
the other side of it is this, like recruiting is so much more than just film, right? I mean, this kid, they've had their hands on him. They know everything about him, his character, his work ethic, what his coaches say about him. I mean, it's such a bigger job than just watching a highlight and getting excited. It truly is. And my phone would go off. And so we don't know the whole picture, but neither do any of these other people. So to sit here and act like he's going to be a first round draft pick like Malik Hooker, it's like, well, you certainly can't deduce that off of the film. I promise you that, because I can evaluate film better than anyone that is out there in recruiting media. So, but that being said, this kid could become a great player, and there is diamonds in the rough for sure. And this kid might be one. He might become one, right? One of those stories like a Denzel Ward or Malik Hooker. He could, right? Malik Hooker was an absolutely elite basketball player. Ball skills were insane. And I mean, just totally different player. So that comparison just, it makes me fucking laugh until my abs hurt. But for every diamond in the rough, you get rough in the rough, right? So it's the percentages of those kids becoming diamonds is lower. And that's where the recruiting process comes into play, right? Yep. Finding out those intangibles, finding out how good, how the character, work ethic, everything else we just talked about.
Yeah, and how coachable are you? I mean, that kid's going to have to be Mick's best friend. I mean, right now, 6'2", 6'3", 175. I mean, he's slight. He's going to take some work, but I'm excited. And also, I saw that that your school, Heritage, I can't remember the name of the school. Oh, my goodness.
American Heritage.
Yeah, American Heritage. I was tripping there for a sec. Just landed a crystal ball from Ohio State for the Fletcher kid, their running back. If we can get a pipeline to American Heritage going again, that would be absolutely ridiculous. Obviously, Ennis is from there. I mean, that 7-on-7 team a lot of people want. I mean, that's going to be really, really big time if they start landing those kids from
American Heritage. That's the key to recruiting Fort Lauderdale, right, is American Heritage, St. Thomas Aquinas, right? We signed Torrance Gibson, the Bosas from St. Thomas, Trayvon Grimes from St. Thomas. And, you got to build those pipelines of those schools, because those two schools are damn near minor league college teams. I mean, they're unbelievable.
They're farm systems for college.
They really are. And that's why I can't stand IMG, because you have schools like that are normal public. Well, St. Thomas is private. Well, they're both private schools, but they're at least actual high schools. It's not like some factory that puts out, it costs like 50 grand a year. Without a doubt. And South Florida Express is the way to do it. That 7-on-7 team, Brett Getz, all those guys that run that is how you That's how you recruit South Florida. And so I don't think they have a guy in the area right now at Ohio State. I think they're doing it positionally, but the relationships are there. I mean, I spent 5 years down there building relationships at St. Thomas and American Heritage and Deerfield Beach and all the high schools. The Dwyer, premier. You go up to Palm Beach and Dwyer High School, where Jack Daniels was. Just there's a lot of relationships down there that are strong. And obviously getting kids from South Florida to come to Ohio State and they thrive, that permeates through the community down there. And now Ohio State is viewed upon as a pretty big time place to go, right? Not that I guess it can be confusing to a fan because you're an Ohio State fan. You're like, why would you not want to come to Ohio State? Well, that's a tough jump for a South Florida kid to move to Columbus, especially when they see the winters and it's just, it's hard when you go to Miami and the campus has palm trees everywhere, girls wearing half naked, you know, next to nothing. And it's like, it's a hard sell. And I know, trust me, I sold it that your decision to go to college is much more important and needs to be more business like than just pretty girls and palm trees. But that's really hard when you look at 24 degrees and snow or, you know, 80 degrees and bikinis. It's like, man, but if I could be a great player at Miami, I could still go to the NFL like they've done and not deal with that. So it's a tough sell, but Ohio State's doing a good job.
Does it help having multiple? Like, would it? I mean, now that we already have one kid from down there, that 7-on-17, does that kind of help open the door for other kids? Like, if we
you get a kid committed, right? The biggest thing I've always talked about is get a quarterback committed, and everything else is easy, right? Because kids go to the opening, they go to all these things, they see this quarterback, they're like, damn, I want to play with him. He's really good, right? Same thing if the South Florida Express. You get one kid committed, and that kid, you know, has a couple friends on the team. Now they might want to play with their friend. Also, he can actively help recruit those kids because he wants his team to be loaded. He wants to win a national championship. So it's huge to get those early commits and get those commits to recruit for you. I mean, that culture you build in a signing class is enormously important. I mean, huge.
Yeah, they do have the one kid from down there already committed to Ohio State, and he came out and said, you know, we could end up seeing one or all of those kids going up there to Ohio State. Don't be surprised when that happens. And I think it's really interesting, obviously, because there is I mean, that's a tough jump, like you said. So I am excited to kind of see how that goes moving forward. I've been watching some old tape. Do you know the last time Ohio State had a kick returner or a punt returner take one to the house?
Yeah, Jalen Marshall.
Yeah, 2014. And when's the last time Ohio State won a title?
Here's another 2014. Here's another fun fact for you, Chris. Do you know who the punt return coach was in 2014?
Who?
Zach Smith.
Oh, never heard of him.
And I got demoted after that because Greg Schiano was the I guess God's gift to punt block and punt return, and we didn't block a punt or return a punt until Chris Olave blocked a punt in against Michigan. So really, I'm still salty about it. Like, I'm not salty about getting fired from Ohio State. I'm not salty about many things. One thing I'm salty about is I got demoted from the punt block punt return coach after the 2014 season, when in the 2012, 2013, 2014, we had multiple punt returns for touchdowns, multiple block punts every year. We were dominant, and I got demoted, and I'm still so salty about it, all because Urban had Greg Schiano's dick in his mouth so far down his throat. It's like, this is where Urban's faults come out, right? He's not intentional at all. His buddy came in, one of his best friends, Greg Schiano, and Greg presents well, and he was talking about all the stuff we needed to do better on punt return and punt block, and you're like, timeout, man. Just don't fuck the defense up. How about that? Don't worry about my shit. My shit's on point, and I'm still that is one of the few things in my career that I'm still pissed about.
It's like a curse almost. Like, we're waiting for the curse to be broken. Like, maybe there is a curse until they write you, I guess. They'll never return one to the house. But so that was the last time Ohio State had someone take one to the house, and the last time Ohio State won a championship. I'm of the firm belief that you needed Jalen Marshall on your roster.
Well, Jalen was also the last really great returner that Ohio State had, right? Since Jalen Marshall, what returners has Ohio State had back there that are dynamic?
I thought Garrett Wilson was dynamic, but they didn't really give him a real chance.
No.
He had a couple punts where he broke for 40, 50 yards, but they never got a chance. And I think maybe this year we could have our Jalen Marshall in Emeka, is what I want to talk about.
I agree. I think Emeka Egbuka, not only do I think he's going to be in the top three receivers and be a focal point on offense, but I truly believe that outside of that, he has an unbelievable chance to impact the return game. Kick return, he looked out. He's the first kick returner we've had, I mean, in forever.
that looked explosive.
I mean, I can't remember the last time we returned a kickoff. Kerry Combs ran kickoff return the first, you know, his first tenure with Urban Meyer, and we didn't take one to the house ever. Not once. I think Jordan Hall was the last time in like 2011 or 2010 that a kickoff has been returned for a touchdown. So I love that kid back there. I think he's unbelievably talented, and I think that he will provide a spark for Ohio State in the return game. And I think, like I said, I think he's going to be a main part of the offense, but even outside of that, I think he's going to make a major impact catching kicks.
And part of it, I think that there really hasn't been an emphasis to get a dynamic guy back there. One of the comments is talking about Jameson Williams was a returner, wasn't he? Not for Ohio State. He should have been, but he wasn't for Ohio State. That was kind of a thing that he
got. Well, he was early. He was early into, 2020, and then he fumbled a kickoff, maybe game 3 or 4, and they pulled him. And then they never gave him another shot. But Jameson Williams is exactly what you want for a kick returner, a kickoff returner, because kickoff and punt's different, right? Jalen was a great punt returner, he was not even our kick returner, because kickoff return is literally it's trying to return a ball on the highway, right? Mm-hmm. Cars are going 70 miles an hour this way. Cars are going 70 miles an hour that way. You just got to hit a crease, find a seam, and you got to go as fast as you can.
You got to gamble, otherwise, just run.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, if you dance too much or you don't have that elite straight line speed, a car's going to switch lanes and wipe you out, right? Where a punt return, I don't even know a good analogy for it. It's more like, you know, you're in your backyard and seven people are trying to beat you up and jump you, and you got to just avoid them all, right?
It's like you're trying to get to work in a meeting and you have to go through a school zone.
Yeah, it's you're dancing around trying to make a guy miss, and you got to hit a crease, and then the straight line speed matters. But it's way more lateral movement. It's totally different skill set. And now you could be great at both. Mm-hmm. I mean, you really can. Percy Harvin was great at both. Now, he didn't do it in college, but
Percy Harvin was great at football.
Yeah, I think Emeka Egbuka can be that guy. I think he has that straight line kickoff return ability. We saw that last year. I think he has some make you miss tangible abilities for a punt return. So I'm excited to watch him do it. And I know Parker Fleming is really going to go all in on Emeka just to be that guy.
It is kind of messed up that Jameson Williams fumbled one or dropped one kickoff and then got pulled for the rest of the season, when we saw Julian Fleming drop two in the same game. Don't want to bash too much on one kid, but we just thought.
Julian Fleming's not a returner. I don't know why he was back there. He's just, I like Julian. I think he's very talented, but he's not that kickoff returner. I mean, he's not that 10, 300 meters where he can just hit a crease and just fucking scorch earth.
Yeah. Like one mistake by the return unit on the return unit, he's gone. But I think that Emeka's in a really similar place that Jalen Marshall was. I mean, Jalen Marshall was a five-star coming in. Obviously didn't contribute that first year. He redshirted. Emeka didn't end up redshirting. And then had two established guys outside, three if you count them. Mike Thomas and Devin Smith were the outside guys, along with Evan Spencer as well. And it opened up a lot for Jalen Marshall. And there were times where he would go away for parts of games because those other two guys and the quarterback situation. But then all of a sudden, like the game I posted yesterday, the four touchdowns in the second half. And the craziest thing about that four touchdowns in the second half, because nobody was surprised. Like, watching it, I wasn't surprised because I had seen the things that Jalen Marshall could do through my TV screen, and I'm sure you weren't surprised being on the field there because you had seen Jalen Marshall in practice.
Yeah, I mean, Jalen was unique. He's a much different player than Emeka Egbuka.
He's super different.
Mm-hmm. And more of a running back. I mean, Jalen was a big, strong kid. Yeah. And so you watch some of those jet sweeps and stuff. I mean, he runs through tackles. I mean, he looked like a running back. He looked like a true hybrid, right? Mm-hmm. A running back slash
receiver. He's 5'11", 205.
I'm telling you, and heavy-handed like a motherfucker. You ask any receiver who they didn't want to play slap fight with, it was Jalen, because he hit you, and that shit felt like a fucking Mack truck hitting you. Like, it's unbelievable, the power that kid had. But, yeah, He was in a very similar situation, though, kind of that fourth, maybe third receiver, mm-hmm. you know, and then by the end of the year,
he was year one.
Yeah. I mean, you know, and Jalen had to convert from quarterback to receiver. So he had a little transition his first year. He certainly was talented enough to play. He just didn't know how to play the position yet, but he ended up being a really, really good player. And one of the key reasons we won a national championship, his blocking in the slot, his ability in the throw game, his ability to motion in the backfield, take jet sweeps, all that stuff. Was really, really critical.
Mm-hmm. No, I firmly agree. I do want to keep moving ahead, Zach. It's not just Ryan Day getting C.J. Stroud ready. It's also Jim Knowles. C.J. had the really interesting quote about not seeing cover one, cover three, or just base coverage every day.
Well, I mean, I will tell you.
Damn it.
That's not only a shot at Kerry Combs and his defense, because that was really a Ryan Day directive to run that defense. That's kind of a shot at Jeff Hafley and what he did defensively. I mean, Jeff Hafley gets a pass around Ohio State. Although I think he's a great coach, he did a phenomenal job. The defense was outstanding. He had two first-round corners and the best pass rusher maybe we've ever had seen in the last 20 years. I mean, just it's a lot easier when Chase Young's rushing the quarterback and you have two first-round corners. A lot easier. And Jordan Fuller, by the way, is back there directing the whole thing as your field general. But yeah, I think it's great for CJ's development, and it's great for when they get in season and he's got a game plan, different defenses to face this multiplicity day in, day out. And it's great to hear about the defense, right? That vanilla defense that we've watched that was successful in 2019, right? It was solid. So this is not a scheme issue. It's a personnel issue to a point, and a development and coaching issue. And I think it's outstanding and good for CJ to get developed by the defense, right? Mm-hmm. That is truly iron sharpening iron.
Yeah. Steel Shambers made a comment about, we're not just running like three plays this whole time. Well, it's like, gee whiz.
I mean, they don't have to do it in the media, right? Yeah, Christ. But yeah, I mean, it's one of those things where any defense can work if if you have really good players that have been developed and they're extremely well coached and they've bought in. You could run cover three, cover one every snap and have a great defense.
Right.
The problem, the thing that multiplicity brings is it's like, it's no different than a daily routine, right? If you wake up every day at 7, drink your coffee, eat your eggs, go to work 9 to 5, come home, make dinner, put the kids to bed, go to sleep. If you do that every single day, eventually you are bored out of your mind and you mentally check out.
Someone's going to rob you.
It's just how human nature is. Mm-hmm. It's the old adage that Phil Knight at Nike talks about, that they do at Nike all the time, is they'll renovate the offices every 2 years. And it's not because they need renovated. It's because that change, right? Painting the walls yellow when they used to be blue, it stimulates production because it's a new environment. It's different. And all of a sudden people start working harder. And he presented it to our staff one time and just showed the spikes in production every time they renovated the offices. It's like, they're not renovating the offices to make it look nice or look cool. They're renovating the offices to stimulate their employees. And it's no different than football players, right? Mm-hmm. That's why after our second year at Ohio State, Urban randomly just walked in and goes, everyone's moving meeting rooms. And you know, it takes a couple months to set up your meeting room the way you want it, right?
Damn.
And he just walked in and was like, Luke, Zach, switch offices. And I'm like, fuck. So here I had to move all my shit out of my office. And Luke Fickle's office was right next door to mine. I'm so like, you had to son get of
all
bitch.
Your stuff out and all your
I had stuff. To get That's all annoying. My stuff out, move to the office next door. Luke had to do the same, get it all reset up for one reason. So that when the players walked in that spring, after 2014, after we won it all, he wanted to stimulate production. He didn't want people to be complacent. So that when they walked in, it was a new environment and they got stimulated. And so that's what this defense does, this multiplicity, where you install like some exotic blitz packages. You install some variations in coverages. And those kids are engaged because they're like, oh, hell yeah. Like, I'm not just running cover three every play. Now this time it's going to look like cover three and I'm going to smack the receiver and it's cover two, right? So many things you can do this, and it just stimulates production and enhances engagement. And so I love it. And anyone that listens to the show knows that I've been bitching about that for 3 years, that it's just so vanilla. Like, I would love to see some kind of blitz package, stand some D linemen up, like sub some people in, put a linebacker at D end. And they did that a little bit with Baron Browning. But ultimately, that's what it does, right? The multiplicity is confusing for the offense, for the quarterback specifically. And it also, it gets the defensive players engaged. They feel like they're on the attack. They're the aggressor. They're, you know, the offense doesn't know what's coming and they can blindside them. It's a great thing for defense.
Yeah. One of the things I did kind of worry about with the defense. Well, it's the picture of this defense, how bad it was the last couple of years. It's coming out really slowly because we knew it was dysfunctioning. You knew there was a scheme issue, but the fact that they were running so few plays and still everybody looked confused really points to how poor the coaching had been, kind of on multiple levels. And it was a full failure by the defensive staff, which is why they had to clear house and get rid of everybody.
Yeah, I mean, the defense is predicated on being, I mean, extremely well coached and maximized, developed at the highest level. And when you're running so little defense, it makes you wonder, like, what the fuck are they doing in meetings? Like, what are you talking about? If you're not coaching these guys up and maximizing them, They're none of them are bad coaches, right? It was a bad cohesion, a bad staff, right? Bad chemistry, obviously malalignment or misalignment, whatever the word is, and of the staff. But you had all that meeting time to teach cover three and one high man. Like, yeah, Christ, should, I could teach that in one meeting and then we would never have to meet again.
Guys, if you're not PhDs in those two, and like on those three plays, everyone should be really fucking good at it. But I do want to say it's also good for CJ Stroud because now CJ Stroud doesn't have the last thing you want for CJ Stroud is the first time you're seeing something to be out on that field. And the more multiple Jim Knowles is, that's going to help prepare CJ Stroud even better for this year.
Yeah, it definitely is. It definitely is. And not only CJ Stroud, I mean, those receivers. They're going to get a different look. Like I mentioned it on the offensive breakdown. If you haven't watched it yet, I broke down Ryan Day's offense in the Rose Bowl just to give you a glimpse of what it's going to look like with these new receivers. Mm-hmm. And there's plays in that cut up where you're watching the receivers say, oh, what are you doing, man? It's press man. Why are you blocking a man player? Well, if you face cover three every day in practice, you get used to just blocking the guy over you, right? Mm-hmm. Blocking a cover two corner versus a bailing cover three corner is way different and way harder. And it's just it's good for everybody, right? The offensive line having to ID pressures. I mean, the blitz packages were so vanilla at Ohio State that the offensive line was at a disadvantage. I mean, you go play Alabama or you go play Clemson. I mean, Brent Venables, his blitz packages are wild. Mm-hmm. I mean, like Star Wars type of shit, right? Like stormtroopers flying everywhere and fucking laser beams flying at you, like just nuts. And if you just block four down, one guy blitzing all day in practice every day, then you go try to block Brent Venables' defense where dudes are walking around, flying around, you don't know who's coming. It's really hard, right? If you're an offensive line that has had 8 months of blocking fucking everything in the world coming at you, when you go play a team, whether they're as talented as Ohio State or even better, if they're lesser talent, it's going to be a cakewalk because yep. You've been doing it day in, day out. So it's every position. Every position benefits from seeing that stuff because I don't care how good Ohio State is. I don't care, you know, if they have two first-round corners in Chase Young and they can run a vanilla defense. That offense, when they play someone who's going to be multiple, it's got a lot of work to do in really 2 days of practice. You think about it, Chris. You get a Sunday night practice, throw that out, that you don't get anything done for the next opponent, right? And then Thursday practice, you're in shorts and T-shirts. Like, you're not really blocking anyone. So they really get Tuesday and Wednesday in pads to learn how to block Star Wars. It's impossible.
Yeah.
Like, it's not possible to do.
You're going up against cover one and cover three. Like, we've seen CJ Stroud thrive in a 7-on-7 atmosphere. We've seen CJ Stroud thrive when it's very vanilla and basic. But what we, me and you both want to see is how can CJ Stroud do when it's chaos? Because everyone can do well when things are all good. Everyone can do well when they know what's coming. But no can doubt. You thrive in chaos? And I think that having Knowles there will definitely help CJ grow in that front as well.
What I want to see from CJ, and you watch that Ohio State cut up, you can watch some of the throws he made. I mean, he's probably one of the more talented quarterbacks I've ever seen throwing the ball. Mm-hmm. But some of those throws where he's bailing backwards and throws it and misses the throw because of it, because he's going to get hit. And some of the times where he doesn't take off and go get 6 yards on a scramble. I mean, that is all I'm looking for. I want to see him step into a throw, take a shot to the chin, and deliver a strike. And then I want to see him evade a pocket and go scramble, like make a defense pay for letting him get out of the pocket because he's athletic enough. And so those are the two things that we need to see from CJ. It's plain and simple. I mean, throwing the ball, I mean, you can always get better, but he's pretty damn good.
Okay, this has to be the year they win a title. Now, I want to ask this question. Don't fry me. Loaded-wise, talent-wise, like preseason-wise, do you think this team could be close to as talented as 2014 Ohio State or 2019 LSU?
That's two different conversations. Defensively, I'm concerned. I think defensively they could be as good as LSU 2019's defense. I don't think that they, I guess they could be. I mean, I think they have two first round corners. I think that if you put the linebacker position is the one that concerns me.
LSU team had Derek White and it had Stingley outside and then Del Pitt at safety. So they had some talent on that team defensively as well. And they had the Lawrence kid on the line. So they did have some talent defensively. They didn't always play well. They gave up big run numbers. Like teams ran all over that 2019.
And LSU's defense was good. It wasn't great, mm-hmm. right? I think the 2014 defense was a little better Ohio State's defense in 2014 was a little better than LSU, but offensively, I can see the comparison. This CJ Stroud's far better than JT or Cardale. So that's already a check mark for this offense. I think receiver wise, similar to 2014. Very similar to 2014. I'm not going to be a Buckeye homer and try to say that we have Ja'Marr Chase and Justin Jefferson on this offense. I mean, those two are two of the top six receivers in the NFL right now. And I mean, as much as I love Jaxon Smith-Njigba, and I think that Marvin Harrison Jr. is going to be a star, as high as I think the ceiling is, to say that they're going to have those two kids, Ja'Marr Chase and Justin Jefferson, that's just lofty. And maybe they will, but I'm not ready to make that claim yet. And the running back position, I think Travion Henderson is better than Clyde Edwards-Helaire, and he'll be on par with Zeke as a sophomore now. So, I mean, I think he'll be right there. But Zeke was special. So I would need to see more out of Travion.
I need Travion in pass pro. Yeah.
Not only pass pro and lead blocking on run plays, just the stuff that Zeke did so well. Cause Zeke was, they're similar runners. I mean, different styles, but similar threats in the run game, threats out of the backfield, very similar. But Zeke was just so good without the ball in his hands that's the only reason I'd give 14 the edge at that position. And then tight end, it's not even close.
Zach, I'm gonna give you some shit though on the thing you talked about. Like, you want to see Trey be a veteran in blocking on lead run plays. They're not gonna run anything.
No, he's not gonna have CJ
Stroud. Yeah, never. No. Not a single time.
No, but I mean, you know, they can run a jet sweep, I guess.
No, I'm just making fun of you because you know that they're not gonna have that. No. CJ Stroud can put his head down and go anywhere.
No, but they can do it to a slot, but it's not really the offense. Yeah. But I think the glaring difference between the two offenses is the tight end position. I mean, Jeff Heuermann and Nick Vannett were NFL football players. I mean, they started in the NFL. They didn't have like Gronkowski careers, but
tight ends don't ever have those kind of careers. Fantasy football kind of ruined tight ends.
They were NFL football players, and we had two of them. And right now, Cade Stover is the only tight end on the roster that is, you know, I think warrants being on the field. G. Scott has a potential to be kind of a hybrid mismatch player, but he's not going to block a defensive end like the two kids in 2014 did. So I really think that's the difference in the offenses right now, is that tight end position, and it's tight ends and linebackers. That's where I give 14 the edge.
Yeah. Jeff Heuermann. I want to just real quick note on Jeff Heuermann. Jeff Heuermann had the 2 year run that he had, unreal. He won the first ever college football playoff, right? And then the very next year he won Super Bowl 50 with Peyton Manning. Just 2 year run for the books. Since then, it's been kind of rocky, but just saying, like,
he's retired now.
Super Bowl 50. Yeah,
he retired now, and he won at every level. I mean, what else could you want?
Two rings for the people. But Zach, I don't have anything else today. We're gonna hope to get out a video to you guys. But do you have anything else?
No, that's it. That's all I got. I appreciate everybody. If you could go check out zone6.com. I'm gonna say it 40 times until all of you go sign up. And I'm telling you, it's free. It is free. 7 days free, and you can cancel after six if you don't like it and pay nothing. So why not check it out? Why not look and see what's behind the paywall and see if it's valuable to you? And if not you, everybody's got a little brother, a nephew, a cousin, you know, whatever that plays football or might coach football. So spread the word. Send them the link and be like, hey, I heard Zach Smith talking about this on his podcast. You should check it out. It's free for 7 days. Just be, what do you say? Be a friend, tell a friend.
Be a friend,
tell. And while you're here, make sure you hit subscribe, hit the bell, like the video, and comment who's going to win the Masters. That's all I got, Chris. Menace out.